I'm back. Did you miss me?
That's right.
Yay.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Yes, we love to see you. Welcome to another episode of Politically Speaking. We have the one and only M on the line, and you heard us. Our baby mama is back in action. She is back outside, y'all. She got a little glow to her. I don't know. What you think, Kirsten? Don't she got a glow like it's a new, it's like a refreshment?
She does. I told her it was so good to see that face looking so beautiful.
I don't know that it's refreshed, but it is happy to be here.
We're glad to have you. And definitely got the one and only Kirsten. Good to have you, Kirsten. I'm so glad to see you guys.
Always good to be here.
Glad to have you guys with us. And then we have the one and only, the rest of the group. We have myself, Erica. So welcome to episode 14. If you are first tuning in, thank you guys for hopping in. If you are a repeat viewer, we love you. Thank you to shout out to our faithful five. So, you know, granted, three of them are on the call, and then the fourth is behind the scenes. You know, nonetheless, still appreciate you. Nonetheless, we got well, this is how you know that it's been a while. I miss you guys. You know, we were so just to figure out, like, what are we even going to talk about? I'm like, nah, we just need to have like a chill. It needs to be a vibe. We haven't seen each other in a while. This is one of those kickbacks. Like, girl, like, what's going on? What's the tea? How is life? How is everybody doing? How is 2026 starting off for everybody? We feeling it? Are we over it already?
I don't know. Let's let Em give an update since we haven't heard from her in a while.
Yeah.
No, I'm gonna put that Punxsutawney Phil on the fire pit. Like, brother needs to read the room and understand. Like, we're not messing around. We're done.
2026. I was so every time in 2025. I kept saying I am so ready for 2026. I am so over 2025. Every time we kept getting closer to the end of the year, I was like, well, I can't wait for next year. And then as soon as next year happened, it's just like, oh my God, what a year already. What a year already.
Another year.
Right. Yeah. So let's go ahead and hop into some pod topics. So we are going to open up with, we already did an introduction. So let's talk about any type of political moments such as, because we haven't had Am on the show. We've been holding it down. Me and Chris have been holding it down.
Listen. Y'all been holding it down and I so appreciate it. And I was listening to all the episodes while I was gone.
Good.
And I was like, a lot has happened since I was gone, first of all. Yeah. And a lot has happened since your last episode without me and now. And so today I was thinking like, God, what are all the things that I've missed and I haven't been able to talk about on the pod? But I was listening to y'all. Y'all covered Charlie Kirk. Y'all covered a lot of stuff while I was gone. So, all right. Okay. Good.
With all those moments, what do you think was like the what? Like, you know, we have a lot of those. Granted, every day is like a what? What in America? But let's talk about some recap. What was some, with you being away, what was something that stuck out to you? Something that maybe even wanted to talk about on the podcast, but couldn't.
Well, you know me, I always try to keep it state house oriented because that's what I do. The day we killed the abortion bill that would have given women the death penalty was like a true, like, where am I moment because I did not expect it. I was at the state house that day and, you know, I always check the vibe of Phil Ford on those days. And I'm like, I'm going to go with whatever he's feeling. If he's feeling good, I'm going to feel good. Like, and he was like, we're going to get walked all over. And I was like, all right, we're going to get walked all over. Like, at least I'm prepared before we walk in there.
Right.
And as this hearing's going on, you can like feel the momentum kind of shift. And I was like, what's going on here? What's happening? And when one of the sponsors of the bill offered an amendment and his amendment failed, I was like, hold the phone. Something's going on. And then the bill failed. I mean, Richard Cash was so pissed. He didn't even adjourn the hearing. And then I was like, is this like a shenanigan? Like, is everyone going to leave? And then he's going to be like, I didn't adjourn the meeting. Everyone come back in and vote again. Like, I thought that there was going to be like some sort of something at play. Cause you know, when you're up at the state house, you see all sorts of crazy stuff. Mm. So I thought for sure this was going to be one of those moments. I was floored. That was like, you don't get too many days like that here in South Carolina. So that was my like WTF moment, but like in a good way, because we deserve some of that too.
I remember just the built up, like just knowing that this was even going to be a discussion. That I do recall that, and I'm like, oh my gosh, the fact that this is a discussion in South Carolina, it's the reality, like things may not just go our way, because again, this is South Carolina, like, you know what I'm saying? It's that reality check. Like, we can always hope and wish and what, but it's the reality. This is South Carolina. So that only goes but so far. So I was definitely like, oh my gosh, South Carolina, please do the right thing. You know what I'm saying? We all can label what we feel is the right thing, but I just feel like, man, nah, this is common sense type of right thing. Like, but that was like, yeah, I do recall that part. What about you, Kirsten? What was your highlight? Like, what?
Donald Trump hit a real low for me when he decided he was going to interrupt the Survivor finale. You know, stupid to a new level. New level. You know, and to spew a bunch of lies when I needed to know who the winner of Survivor was. So... that was rough. It was a rough day.
Listen, that's relatable though. Like, a lot of people who don't care about politics, like,
yeah,
that you don't interfere. No.
Yeah, some of my friends that I know do not care about politics, we're literally talking about it and like how late they had to stay up, and they have kids and stuff, and they're like, well, we stayed up till midnight anyway because we want to know who won. You know, so instead we had to watch an old man sundowning rambling about God knows what, how everything is so affordable. And okay, you want to come live my life, Donald Trump? But you know, he wouldn't make it 30 minutes.
He wouldn't. Mm-mm. He sure wouldn't.
You know, and it's not even like I have a bad life, you know, but to him, oh no. I'd be like, okay, here's my paycheck and here's everything you have to pay.
Figure it out.
Make it work. And then he'll be like, oh wait, he'll never admit that that it's hard to do, but you know, he'd look at it.
Groceries. And, yeah. We invented a new word, groceries. No one was ever using the word groceries before.
Is that your image of him?
Listen, I don't ever want to actually sound like him, so that's the best you're going to get.
But I think it's an A for effort, the fact that you work for him. Sometimes whenever I'm trying to poke fun of him, I do try to tap into his voice, because I want people to actually understand.
I don't think I've ever tried, because I don't... Yeah, I got that coming out of my mouth.
I would piggyback off of Kristen and talk of my WTF moment was that going when Trump, it's his social media handles. It's like I'm trying to figure out, it was very hard to pick one, but it's just, just the handle in general is always like a WTF, especially the ones, and this was my example. Was when he tapped into AI for the No Kings Day and had the plane fly over. Yeah. And he dropped the... you know what I'm talking about?
You can say it.
Yeah. Bunch of turds and shits and caca and all that stuff. Yeah. Yeah, just... So that stuff, and then it was the insult, because it wasn't even like a solid turd. You know what I'm saying? It was way.
No, just diarrhea.
You know, this was the layers of like, but y'all voted for him. So even though I was I was like, but then I was like, wait a minute, I ain't vote for him. So it's okay. Y'all voted for him.
It was the perfect example of like, don't go telling people I'm mad. I'm not mad. I'm like, Sir, if you're not mad, you wouldn't have been posting anything.
That's crazy. Yeah.
You know, which I want to know what he had to type to put that together to make the plane. You know what I'm saying? Think about it. Because you got to be specific. I need a plane. And then you got to make the crowd big. Make sure it's a big crowd. You know, sprinkle the crowd with some diversity.
Yeah, you gotta be specific in those AI prompts.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then you gotta watch it and then replay it to make the edits. Cause ain't nobody like getting this stuff in one shot.
And listen, and we all know, because we're like a little bit more on the inside than the average person, that like a lot of politicians don't run their own social media.
No.
And so I've sort of always wondered with him, like, where the line is between what he posts and what he tells people to post. Mm-hmm. And so, like, when stuff like that comes up, I'm like, where was that line? Like, how much of that was him? And how much of that was somebody, like, trying to be clever and act like him? Both of which are highly concerning. But
someone is just like, well, they come to the table, you know, at the table is conversations about affordability and like houses, and then conversations about poo-poo and the AI. You know, this is all like real conversations at the White House. We're going to sprinkle some Gavin Newsom. Oh, I tried to do the voice. Did you hear it?
I heard a little bit.
I tried. We're warming up now. We're warming up.
Listen, when you said that we were going to like find a moment between October and December, I legitimately had to like go check when some of these things happened.
Me too.
Because I was like, this could have been a day ago, a month ago, a year ago. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. 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 Crazy. For real. Ugh. Oh my gosh. All right. So let's go on a segue. Enough giving him some PR, you know?
But you know what?
Press is good press.
Yeah.
I had forgotten about that video. So I'm really glad you brought that back.
Yeah, and I just kept thinking like, nah. Y'all need to see this because y'all voted for him. Like, it's not bothering me. I'm cackling because at the end of the day, as much as he is aggravating, that man is funny. It's like he's a very disturbing type of funny. It's like, I don't want to laugh at you, but your ignorance is wild, man. Like, half this stuff is not on my bingo card. Like, I need that on a t-shirt or something. Like, this man is funny. But I'm like,
February. It's the first week of February, and my bingo card's already full.
For real. For real. Some of them Dago AI people had their mouth, they had their mouth open. I'm just saying. You good, Kirsten?
Yeah, I think my cat broke something, but, you know. Just normal chaos around here, you know. I don't even have kids, and it's chaos around here, so I don't know how y'all do it.
I'll tell y'all a story another time about a work call that I was on last week while Phil was traveling, and I had all three of the kids.
I love a good story time.
Oh, boy.
All right, so let's segue into tell us some updates going on in good old South Carolina.
Ain't nothing good.
Ain't nothing good, girl.
Ain't nothing.
Wow. Not a shocker.
We tried.
I'm so sorry to tell you. Ain't nothing good. Session started the second week of January, like it always does. And just like always in that first week, I was up in Columbia testifying because it hasn't been a damn year that I haven't been up there the first week of January testifying against something. And
immediately.
Mm-hmm. But then this year, even the second week, I had to be up there testifying against something. Mm. That was a new one. That was a new one. Mm. I haven't been up there twice in January to testify. We have had a parental bill of rights passed out of House committee, will be debated on the floor, which essentially says parents of teenagers have the right to all of their medical records for like non-emergent situations. So that includes STI care, contraception, all of that kind of stuff, but also educational. So if a child is going to see the school counselor and wants to talk about, you know, questions about their sexuality or their gender ideology, or if their teacher wants to talk about, you know, Amelia Earhart, the first, you know, pilot, anything that has to do with gender, the school has to identify the notify. Let's get the word right. Notify the parents, and the parents have to give clear-cut consent for their child to like participate in those conversations. So in South Carolina, a 16-year-old can be married, a 16-year-old can be pregnant, but a 16-year-old cannot independently get STI care or birth control without their parent knowing. So that's Bill 4757 will be on the House floor for debate next week. The House has already passed out and headed over to the Senate a K-12 and higher education, like public higher education, bathroom and changing facilities ban. So essentially they're saying whatever sex you were assigned at birth, you have to use those facilities for bathrooms, changing rooms, locker rooms, if you're doing like an overnight, that type of stuff. Obviously, that's problematic for our trans friends, but also then we're starting to police like people who just don't look feminine enough, right? Like tomboys, right? Yeah. And it's all about like saving women's spaces. Okay, but then you're going to have trans men in women's bathrooms. Men who are men, who have beards, who have muscles and six packs and body hair, right? Like, what are we doing? Why? This is not a problem. So that passed the House this week. We'll go to the Senate. And then also passed the House this week is a bill that would reclassify medication abortion pills, so mifepristone and misoprostol, as Schedule 4 drugs, so the same level as like narcotics, making them much more difficult to get your hands on, and also making it public record when you're prescribed them. So imagine if you were in an abusive relationship and you wanted to end a pregnancy through medication abortion. Now that's public record. Your partner knows, and that's going to be 100 times worse, right? And so just, you know, problematic after problematic after problematic. So that's where we're at. I will say the one bright spot, and then I'll answer your question. The one bright spot is that the governor has prioritized in his budget universal free school breakfast for all children in the state. The budget go through as we expect, every public school student in the state of South Carolina should receive free school breakfast next year. And he's on record saying he thinks it should be breakfast and lunch, but he's just going to go for one thing right now. And hopefully whoever is governor next will carry that torch through to the finish line for lunch too. But we love when kids are getting fed, even though we're attacking them in 100 million other ways. Right. So, that parental rights bill, I got to call some legislators hypocrites. They really didn't like that. But that was a fun moment for me. But Kirsten, what was your question?
No, I mean, it wasn't so much a question as an observation that I didn't hear you mention any bills that would actually solve any of South Carolina's problems. So there's a shocker and a disappointment, because it's like, let's spend our time talking about this dumb stuff that affects, like, nobody's concerned about these things right now, you know, but I'm concerned about a number of things going on that, like, are none of those, and most people I know.
Kirsten, you live in the part of the state where there is a huge measles outbreak. Probably correct. Should be talking about that.
Yeah, because, but no. You know, and that was one of my other, like, shocking moments from our break was just all of the stuff around the vaccine guidance and Trump's super misleading post saying that kids in America are getting like 76 vaccines or something, which is like, I remember seeing that post and look and just my jaw dropping. And I was like, that doesn't seem right. Like immediately.
That was intentionally, that was like intentionally rage bait. And I'm like still so bad about it.
Yeah. Because as soon as I saw it, I was like, I don't have kids. I have no idea the number, but I'm like, I guarantee it's not. There's no way it's that many. And but one that people should be getting is the measles. And the crazy thing about the measles, what we're seeing is my students, I work at a nursing school, and they have to go do clinicals in hospitals and whatnot. And what our hospital systems are requiring for our students, they have to get a titer, which is a blood draw that shows if you have immunity to measles and other, but like specifically they're looking at measles immunity. And if you don't have immunity, in order to go to clinicals there, you have to get a booster MMR shot. Well, then, you know, we run into challenges where some of our students are like, oh, I don't want to get vaccines. Okay, well, then you don't want to be a healthcare professional. You know, it's a problem right now and nothing is being done. It's just running rampant with no, but I do think, you know, and this kind of shocked me. I saw Josh Kimbrell on.
I'm so glad you saw that.
On the news. Well, and I never watch, like, I don't watch the news anymore. I don't watch world news. I can't. But my mom watches the local news and I just happen to be in her room and I look up and I'm like, oh, there's Josh Kimbrell. I wonder what nonsense he's spewing right now. And then I started listening and I'm like, wait. And I even told my mom, I stopped her. I was like, this is a Republican, like, just so you know. But yeah, I mean, even he was saying, you know, that it's a problem. But not, are they doing anything?
Not just a Republican. He's like one of the most extreme Republicans. Mm-hmm. And he's like, MMR shots, go get them. This is a problem. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I mean, he can say that all he wants, but like, there's nothing being done to, yeah, I mean, besides just telling people that. And they're like, okay, Josh Kimbrell, I don't know you. Like, yeah, you're a state senator, but I, so. Yeah, it's infuriating. Mm-hmm. Because my cousin's son, they're not doing any vaccines for the, like, my cousin and his girlfriend, they're not vaccinating their kids. And that's one of their children has been home from school for like over 40 days due to quarantine because he's not vaccinated. So he has to stay home.
Wow.
That is just, like, what? Like, what purpose is that serving? Your child is missing all of this instructional time because you won't give him a vaccine. Like, make that make sense to me. But, you know.
Here's a public service announcement for all of our listeners, even though I'm sure everybody who's listening does not fall into this category if you're listening to the woke politically speaking, but you know, we like to spit facts on this podcast. So I'll drop some facts so that when you meet somebody, you can be like, oh, I heard this on my podcast. Even if you just have one of your two doses of the MMR vaccine, you are 93% protected from measles. 93% protected from one dose. Wow. I know way too much about MMR because I have three kids and only one of them is age 4, which is the age that you get your second dosage. So I have had so many conversations with not only my children's pediatrician, but all my pediatrician friends. So I probably know way too much about the MMR process. Like the key thing that I tell people, 93% with one shot.
Well, and that brings me to, you know, I have several friends who have babies that were born, like a couple were born in August, one was born in October. These babies are too young to get the vaccine. And so my friends are worried sick about their kids and they can't wait to till they get this vaccine. And, mm-hmm. you know, they want to do the right thing, but they're scared because these people are, don't want to listen to science, which is a real travesty.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's really what it comes down to, right? It's like, that's why it's a public yeah. health concern, is because there are literally vulnerable populations who cannot get vaccinated, right? Even Tatum, he can get a pre-booster, if you will, at 6 months old, but he's not 6 months old yet. And that doesn't count for one of his two doses. Like you get your first dose at 12 months and then you get your second at 4 years. Because of this outbreak, you can get a booster anywhere between 12 months and 4 years. But also babies can get a pre-booster anytime between 6 months and 12 months. Again, I know way too much about the MMR vaccine.
I was like, I don't know if my friends know that.
Yeah. So here, spread my knowledge. But
yeah, going
before
to.
before six months, there is nothing that I can do to prevent nope. my baby from getting MMR, from getting exposed to measles anywhere in this state. Like when I go to Columbia and come back, if I'm around people from the upstate, yeah. like I'm running a risk of exposing my baby to the measles because of the just chaos that is raining down on this state.
Yep. Yeah,
it's crazy.
So since we are opening up with some heavy topics and some negative,
well, y'all miss me. Y'all miss me so much.
I just missed these state house reports. They just filled my cup. They just give me so much sparkle and razzle dazzle. Yeah. Okay.
M with the doom and gloom.
Yeah, exactly.
Sorry.
Yeah, yeah. Take me out to eat first. Ugh. Okay, okay. Who wants to bug me up first? Okay. So why don't we end on a high note? Not only a high note, but in honor of Black History Month, I thought we end on this topic that we're going to introduce today. It's is called Did That Age Well? And then we're going to talk about some Black history quotes. And then we're going to talk about how, you know, when it was said at the time, did it age well as far as how is it being tailored into 2026? All right. So let me highlight some of our Black advocates and we're going to have some fun, some good mm-hmm. discussion. So the first quote that I'm going to open up with is the one and only James Baldwin. He says, "I can't believe what you say because I see what you do." Mm. So my question and recap to you guys for discussion, prediction question, in 2026, do we finally see policies that match the promise? And I ask that question because we see candidates wanting to run for the ballot. We see people being fired up and angry about what Trump promised that he was going to do. But nonetheless, with what the question says, or the quote was, "I can't believe what you say because I see what you do." So what is your prediction as far as in 2026? Do you think with everything that we have witnessed that finally we're going to see policies that match a promise? I'm going to kick it off to Kirsten, and then I'm going to kick it off to Em.
I don't know. I'm pretty pessimistic on this one. So I'm not sure. You said this is going to be a fun segment. I'm like, But I mean, I love, like, I love that quote because I think that's just so mm-hmm. much of where, so, like, are you specifically talking about, like, policies in terms mm-hmm. of, like, the Republicans
or
potential Democratic candidates?
Not even Democrats, just the future of politics in 2026. With everything that's going on, how do we feel that the people are going to view it and react? Like, do we think that we're finally going to believe that people are not only going to make promises, but they're going to have those policies and match it up? So what is your prediction? You're saying no.
I mean, you know, you look at January and the first few days of February and we're seeing promises or mm-hmm. words mm-hmm. that were said that are not what's actually happening. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, like, even when I was talking about Trump's survivor interruption, when you talk about prices and things going down, but that's not... that's not what's happening. Instead, we see, you know, Trump and all of his corruption, and instead of looking out for the American people, like he claims, got him suing his own IRS, trying to gain $10 million for his own pocket, which goes against what he said about bringing prices down. Because if the IRS has to pay him $10 million, well, who is that $10 million price tag get passed on to? Americans, taxpayers. So, I mean, and that's just one example of we're just... I don't believe anything that a Republican says anymore, unless they're talking about something awful. Like if they're saying like, yeah, we're going to, you know, like abortion, we're going to make it illegal for everybody in the United States. Like if they said that, I would believe it because it's something truly awful. And now if they say something positive, no, I'm not going to believe that because I haven't seen it. So, yeah.
Especially after we saw the doo-doo clip. Go ahead, Em.
I agree with that second part, Kirsten. Mm-hmm. I will be the positive one here, though, and highlight the new mayor of New York City, Soran Mamdani, and say that what I have seen from him has been that refreshing change of pace. I mean, I didn't follow him all that closely because I'm not a resident of New York City. But from what I have seen from afar, the message that he shared that resonated outside of city walls seems to be what he is doing on a day-to-day basis, right? I saw him out shoveling snow while people, you know, were stuck in the snowstorm. You know, it makes me hopeful. Because I know that he motivated a lot of people in his campaign to be that kind of leader themselves. So I'm hoping that maybe this next generation of candidates come November will take a page out of Mayor Mamdani and lead the same kind of way. I don't know. I'm optimistic.
Good.
No, which that's is good. Yeah. I wish I wasn't so pessimistic. I wish
And Kirsten is a realist. Ain't nothing wrong with that. We need those people too.
Yeah.
Yeah. For me, I'm going to say absolutely. The answer is yes for me. I feel like that's because Gen Z is so tired of the age demographic of the people that's in office. And so I feel like they have repeatedly said their opinions about the age of these people in these positions having control over them. And so I feel like with this new flood of generation and then the fact that we're witnessing what is all happening, I don't think that they are going to put up with it. So I feel like there will definitely be some new faces. And I feel like I've seen a lot of younger people running for office too. Like when I refresh my algorithm, there's a lot of more young faces that are wanting to get involved. And then they have their platforms, and then there is tailored to the complete opposite of the person that's holding that seat. So I definitely feel like there's hope. There's hope for
the future. Some of those institutionalist older people, I think, are realizing the moment. Right. Steny Hoyer, Nancy Pelosi have both said they're not going to run for their seats again. Granted, there are still so many more that could take a page. But it feels like there are cracks in that dam. So I feel like I have to hold on to hope on that or else I'm just going to.
And I even feel like Republicans are low key internally tired of Trump. They're seeing that. Wait a minute. That his policies of direction is actually like is bothering their constituents, and their constituents are coming to them directly. They can't go to Trump. They're going to go and yell at them at the town hall. They're going to take away their vote when it's time to vote for them. So I feel like they're feeling the pressure of it. And I feel like they're going to secretly they're going to side-eye Trump and be like, maybe this wasn't the move.
WTF moment that we didn't talk about from October to December was Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Yeah, that was a big one.
Right. Exactly. Good example. Good way to plug that in right there.
Yes. Good job. Yeah. Good plug. Prime example. These people are tired. So I definitely feel like there is going to be some shifting in the direction come next year or come sometime this year.
So I'm gonna keep that.
I don't know though. With Marjorie Taylor Greene, I'm still skeptical of it. Like I keep waiting for her to pop out with something crazy. And I hope she doesn't. But like, there's part of me that's like,
run
she's
for
planning
governor or something.
Yeah.
Yes. 100%.
She's planning something, and I don't trust her. So I hope, you know, I'm hoping that she's gonna stay on track, but we'll see.
All right, so let's try another one. This one is from Kamala. She says, okay, I try to capture some of her moments. Man, it was hard to like even narrow that down. But she says that, oh, sorry, guys. She says, people understand the economy that just can't afford to live in it. And that's such a powerful statement. We fully understand this economy, and that's why we fully understand we cannot afford to live in it. Like, there's no confusion.
Hard disagree. I hard disagree. I don't understand anything about the economy. You would be better off speaking Chinese to me than you would be speaking about the economy to me. Sorry, Kamala.
So with that being said, do you predict that in 2026, leaders are going to finally start speaking to lived experience? I feel like everybody talks about hypothetical. Ooh, this is what would, you know, affordable housing could look like. This is what flooding would not look like if we didn't, you know, have to experience it. So I feel like, do you think 2026 leaders are going to finally start being real? It talked about, you know, lived experience as they go down the rabbit hole with their campaigns. I will say, Em brought up the New York person. What was his name, Em?
He's a great example of someone. Great example of someone who can talk about a lived experience. And I feel like that should be studied. Like, he resonates with so many people. Even when he's getting attacked, even his rebuttals is so elegant. Right. Just like, deliver, mic drop. Such a good blueprint.
My answer is based off of that. Is like, if we start to have leaders who have similar lived experiences, then yes. But right now, our leaders do not have the same lived experiences that we have to make these conversations relatable. They don't know what it's like to go paycheck to paycheck to even start to have those affordability conversations. As much as I loved Kamala Harris, as much as she tried to be relatable with her single mother and the immigrant family and this and that, when she started talking about the opportunity economy, I was just like, sister, what does that mean? I have opportunity. Yes. That's not what this is about. This is not like, you're losing me. You're losing me. And so it's like, until we have leaders in place that have had the same struggles that we have had and have had to climb their way out to get to these positions of leadership and know what policies have helped them get out of those positions, that is when it will start to happen.
Agree 1000%. And that was something I was actually thinking about or reading about earlier today was, you know, the DNC they conducted the 2024 autopsy, but didn't release the findings of it on why Kamala lost. But I've been saying all along, I really think it's because we need somebody that can speak to the affordability thing. Because when you think about what's front and center on voters' minds, people are thinking about being able to afford things. I mean, that's, you think about that every single day. And for some people, they think about it every single minute of every single hour. Like, it's just this constant struggle, this constant rat race. And that was the exciting thing about Mondami, is he could speak from lived experience and he was relatable. And I just hope that we can get that out of. But my fear, and this is challenging because, like, you look, and y'all might have seen this Facebook post. I'm not going to say who posted it, but talking about how much legislators get paid in South Carolina and how very, very little it is. So in order to be a legislator, you basically have to have a job that allows you to take that meager salary and run with it. Like me, I can't quit my job to make, I don't even know, $10,000, $11,000 a year. I mean, I know there's the stipend, but okay, maybe we bring that up to $20,000. It's still, there's no way I could walk away from my job. But if you're a lawyer and you have your own practice, you can step away for several months out of the year to deal with legislating. And then, you know, maybe you come back to the law practice the rest of the year or whatever. But when you, regular people who have lived experiences, it can be really daunting and inaccessible for them to. And I think that's a huge challenge, but I don't know that the solution to that is very easy.
Yeah, because then to the other side of that argument, right, when legislators say like, oh, we need to pay ourselves more, like nobody, yes. Like that is a non-starter for a lot of people. Like, of course you want to pay yourselves more. Yeah. But then the legislators are like, oh, well, we actually don't want to pay ourselves more because then the everyday people are going to want to come run for office and they might unseat us, right? It's like there's two different frames of thought in the same argument. Yes. And this is a conversation that I feel like I am stuck in my world regularly, but I'm with you, Kirsten, 1,000% on that.
All right, so I'm going to end it on a think piece, and I'll be transparent. This one is gonna have y'all pause and look at it, be like, "Is this really for me?"
Oh God!
But in honor of Black History Month, okay. You're like, where are we going with this, Erica?
You all do it. Go ahead.
So we're going to end it on this question. We're going to go down the rabbit hole. My last question is Black Twitter, okay? So the question is a repetitive thing down the rabbit hole of Black Twitter that we always say is that every 4 years, politicians suddenly remember the Black voters exist. With that being said, the question is, the prediction question will be, do campaigns in 2026 finally build a relationship with the Black voter? I will kick this up while you guys think. I'll start. So with my answer, I don't have faith in this one. I'm sorry. That one is a very small window because it gives me flashbacks of not a more Kamala, but just the overall picture of every time every time a Black person has the audacity to want to run for anything. You know what I'm saying? It's just such a big issue. And I feel like the disconnect is why we say they only think about us every 4 years. And that's because in between that, no one thinks about us at all. You know what I'm saying? So it's kind of like they only come out when it's like the president's, you know, it's time to go, hurry up and make some quick outreach. No, you should have been outreaching. But then again, Black people are, I feel like that's our disconnect, is the fact that we keep saying they need to outreach to us, but then we're not doing anything on our end to make ourselves accessible. We're already disconnected regardless. So it's very hard to even, you know, start the process. But I do feel it that they only come around for our vote when it's the time and the need. The time and the need is Monday through Sunday. You know what I'm saying? 24 hours, 365. But I do feel like there is a select time when politicians decide, okay, I do. Especially with Democrats. I'm going to go ahead and throw it out there. Especially with the Democratic Party, boy. They just assume that Black people are going to just vote for them. And I'm going to let you know. I don't care if you're a Democrat or not. I'm going to, at the end of the day, figure out, well, what did you do to get my vote? Or what are you going to do to earn my vote? What are you going to do to keep my vote? But I do feel some type of way about, yes, that politicians only come around every 4 years when it's that time. But how do you guys feel about, you know, politicians when it comes to the Black community?
So this is something that I think about kind of a lot, actually, because I think about Hillary Clinton, and I love me some Hillary Clinton, like wanted her to, like, I love her. But huge mistake. And like, I'm thinking specifically of Detroit, because where I'm from. Huge Black population that contributes heavily to Michigan for a long, long time being a blue state for the Electoral College victory. But then you look at Hillary, no outreach to the Black people in Detroit, like not even when it was election time, maybe some, but like just ignored the Black vote and took it for granted, was like, oh yeah, Black people are going to vote Democrat. Like, we're good. We don't need to spend the resources on this. And the Black people just didn't come out, like, because it's in that case, it wasn't like they went and voted for Trump. They just didn't vote. And Michigan went for Trump in 2016. And that was huge. I mean, and there's other reasons for that. But her skipping Detroit and taking it for granted, I would say played a pretty big role in that. And but am I hopeful that that's going to change? No, unfortunately. And, you know, you were talking about how Black people can be disconnected and, like, it can be hard to reach them. But I think we just have to be creative. You know, I think there's ways because, you know, there's places and things that Black people are paying attention to. Not necessarily maybe politics related, but you can go into other spaces and talk to those people. It doesn't have to be like in a strictly like, oh, let me come knock on your door. No, there's so many other opportunities, but it does take being creative. And I think it takes like year-round organizing structure that is different, is challenging. So not very, I mean, again, here I come with my pessimistic self, but not super hopeful for it just because I don't know. I don't see any efforts being made to change that. But, you know, I would love to see it happen because I think it could do huge things for the Democratic Party. So, I'd love for it, but I don't.
You know, see, you're predicting and there's no sudden movement.
No.
I feel you, girl. I feel you.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you. Well, so first in 2022, we saw that problem right here in South Carolina, even with Black Democratic candidates. We saw House seats flip that were safely, that should have been safely blue, because Black voters were tired of being ignored in certain areas and they did not show up. They sent their message loud and clear, and we sent Black Democrats home. And we lost seats that we shouldn't have lost. In a year that was the opposite in every other state in the nation, South Carolina had a red wave because of that very reason. I will say that I think part of the problem in South Carolina is that we don't have people commit to run for office early enough to start doing that year-round work, right? So they only can show up when it's election time because we only have candidates when it's election time. On the flip side, on the rare occasion that we have candidates ahead of time, and I'm just going to throw his name out there because this race has been in the news lately, Congressional 1. Mac DeFord has been running his race for Congressional 1 for well over a year now. He has had the time, because he also ran 2 years ago, to start doing that work. Well, then he spent that time. Now he's got 6 opponents in his race. I can only imagine how conflicted he feels about the time and resources spent if there are now members of the Black community who are saying, oh, well, there are other candidates that I want to spend my time getting to know. And he's like, but I've spent, you know, 2 years, 4 years, you know, being here for y'all, right? It's a two-way street. So it's not an easy fix. I don't know what the answer is. Also, as a person, a white person who is also not Christian, I always feel very disingenuous about the church visits as a candidate. That doesn't feel right in my heart. I know that it's necessary. I know that it's necessary in South Carolina, but it's not comfortable for me. And if it's not comfortable for me, like how are the parishioners feeling, right? Like, it's a very sensitive, in like the true sense of the term, subject and topic, that I think there needs to be a better way to reach Black voters other than just going to their churches on Sundays. And I don't know what that answer is either.
That's a valid point too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really like that point.
Mm-hmm. I also thought about how when it comes to, it's just the assumption that also I don't like when it comes to the Black vote. I feel like people come, when they talk about like affordable housing or like food stamps, or I feel like they box us. You know, it's like, well,
there's only certain topics that are talked about.
I'm like, well, come on now. Yeah. Like, hey, there's other people who got these same problems. You know, like, what the heck? Like, stop doing that. That's the part that is like, well, don't come knocking on my door just because of that topic. Like, hey, I'm middle class too. Like, hey, yeah. I got a passport. Stop it. Like, don't do that to me. You know what I'm saying? That's what I'm just like, that's the part of, well, what do you think the Black vote is? I'm confused. You think, like, please tell me, what is the Black vote? Is it, you think I'm like, I got holes in my socks? You think I'm on insulin or something? Got one tooth, you know?
Seriously.
What do you think? I'm like, no, I would like some good quality of life. That is the Black vote. Like, come on now, stop it. So that's just the layer of what is just aggravating with politicians and just what, again, when it comes to the Black vote. But I'm glad that we can have this discussion because, again, you brought up some valid points and you brought up some food for thought. So if anybody is listening and you can contribute to any of these moving parts, you know, help us out. You know, like, let's talk about it and stuff like that. So on that note, thank you guys for tuning in to another episode of Politically Speaking. Until next time, see you guys.
Bye.
This is Kirsten Pruitt. Please subscribe to the show wherever you find podcasts and consider leaving us a rating. You can find links to our social media and YouTube page in the show notes. Thanks again for listening.
The preceding podcast is solely owned by the host or hosts and is distributed by Big Media LLC. Copyright 2026.